This is the second part of a three-part series. It features Warner Braun, the president of the CRI. Warner, back to the Government Oversight Committee of the House of Representatives.
Are there additional regulations that you noted to this committee?
Yeah, you know, a couple of others that are important to us, and one of them seems almost laughable, but the government has created some what they call green procurement and environmentally preferable purchasing. And a good example, and one that's near and dear to our hearts, is around cleaning products, be those cleaning chemicals, be they extraction systems, vacuum cleaners, et cetera. And they have specifically named two programs. One is the Green Seal program, which is a private organization, and the other one is EPA's Designing for the Environment. Now, we really like Designing for the Environment because we believe it does a good job of identifying products that are green, especially in the area of cleaning chemicals. And we, in fact, use EPA's Designing for the Environment for our list of green products in the Seal of Approval program. Let's just give the backstory. If you went out and you got your product identified as environmentally preferred by EPA, then you could apply to us, if you're in the Seal of Approval program, to be listed as a green cleaning product. Now, here's the difference between EPA standalone or Green Seal standalone. They do this in environmental assessment, and it makes no difference in their mind whether the materials work for their intended end use. We think that's crazy. I mean, we start with the premise that if it doesn't work, how can it ever be green? You know, so our approach is, you know, first of all, we need to show that the stuff works, and then do the assessment. In addition, is it environmentally preferred or green? And then you got the best of both worlds. You got something that works and something that's environmentally friendly. And so, you know, we preach this litany to Congressman Issa. You know, I mean, let's start with the concept, you know, that it's got to work to be green, not green, and then if it works, it's a plus. That's a crazy way of looking at it. And so we tried to make that point. And then probably the last one I'll just highlight, maybe a couple of more, is the whole issue of coal fly ash. You probably remember about 2 or 3 years ago there was an impoundment levee that broke up in Tennessee, and a lot of coal ash, you know, flooded down through the river valley and took out a number of homes. That got EPA and the Sierra Club all up in the Twitter, and believed, and so EPA felt like they needed to regulate coal ash. Now, I'm making a distinction between coal ash and fly ash, and it's important. We'll talk about it in a second. And so their initial approach is that they want to label coal ash as hazardous so that they can use the Toxic Substance Control Act to regulate the disposal and handling of coal ash at the state level. Now, again, you know, I'm going to sound like a state's rights-er here, but I mean, in reality, the problem with coal ash is the volume of material that's coming from coal-fired plants. It's not the toxicity of it. I mean, in large measure, it's a glass. So there's two issues in our mind. You know, one is the proper handling of coal ash. And we believe that's a state issue, and EPA needs to stay out of that.
When we were talking about some of the information you were giving to a congressional committee dealing with regulations, one of the regulations you were talking about dealt with coal ash.
How does coal ash tie into the carpet industry?
Well, just a perfect segue. So there's that issue. And then there's a whole separate issue of coal fly ash. And coal fly ash, there's the ash that's at the bottom of the residue that's left after you burn the coal. Then the coal fly ash is all the fines that go up in the combustion plume and are scrubbed out by water scrubbers. Now, these are all very small particles, obviously, since they can be, you know, go out in the exhaust if they weren't scrubbed out by water. Now, along comes a bright company that figures out that they can take this coal fly ash, they can sieve it to get standard sizes, and oh, by the way, wouldn't it make a good substitute for calcium carbonate in carpet? Okay, so lo and behold, when they started testing coal fly ash and for example, SB latex, but it's also works in polyurethane and others, what they found was not only did it replace a lot of the calcium carbonate that we were paying to have mined and shipped and ground and all that, but it changed the rheology in such a way that it made a better carpet. So now you have a product that is cheaper, but yet makes a better product and requires you to mine less calcium carbonate. I mean, you know, that's a win-win-win. Mm-hmm. So we've been fighting very, very hard with EPA for the better part of a year to keep them from labeling coal fly ash as a hazardous substance, because the last thing we need is a label on the back of carpet that says this contains a hazardous material. And again, coal fly ash is not hazardous. It's dark in color, but when you look at it under a microscope, it's like a small glass bead. And so, you know, we're putting essentially a glass bead particle in the carpet to improve its performance and do the right thing for the environment.
Would this have anything to do with the administration's view of coal in general?
You know what? This time I'm not rising to the bait. I'm going to let the viewers come to their own conclusion on that.
Let me ask you a question. You had mentioned earlier carpet was made to be difficult to come apart, obviously. Yeah. Is there work afoot that you're aware of to change that?
You know,
To make it more recyclable, I guess is what I'm really saying.
Well, there's a lot of work going on to make carpet more recyclable, no question about that. Do I know of specific projects? No. And, you know, if I ask, I probably wouldn't even be told. Because as you can imagine, if somebody somehow came up with a magic carpet, that's kind of cute, a magic carpet that was made, for example, of one polymer, and at the end of its life, all you had to do is throw it in a vat, depolymerize it, get the monomer out, and make new carpet again, I mean, would you tell everybody that what you were working on? I doubt it. So, you know, I've always been told not to speculate, but, you know, again, since you know, forcing me to do it, you know, I would be astonished if nobody's out there working on a system just like that. Okay. But it's tough. You know, you got to find one polymer that does four or five different things that the current crop of polymers do in carpet today. It's tough.
In terms of Congressman Issa's committee, what are your feelings there in terms of timeline, and how's this all going to play out, do you suspect?
Well, let me give you one more example, and then because I got one more good example. I mean, the whole energy area is another one, and in fact, this is one of our key messages that we had when we went to Capitol Hill in February, as you recall. You know, the U.S. does not have a comprehensive energy policy. We just don't. I mean, you know, we manage energy by knee-jerk, and we need a comprehensive plan. And why do we need that? Because, Dave, if you were in the carpet industry, and let's say that you were thinking about building a new production line, and you had no idea whether your energy was going to be X dollars per BTU or 2x dollars per BTU, wouldn't that make you a little nervous about building that plant if you couldn't figure out what the economics of that plant were going to be? And that's where we are today. And it's not just the carpet industry. It's across the United States in general. The uncertainty about what's going to happen with energy, and especially energy pricing and availability, is a huge, huge counterproductivity issue in this country today. Mm-hmm. And that issue has to be addressed.
The Congressional Oversight Committee requested this information from the CRI. Do you have any feeling as to how this will be used?
Do you think this will result, or do you have any reason to think this will result in legislation which would be opposed to some of the EPA regulations that have already been written and will be written going forward?
In the current economic climate, I wish the answer to that were yes. Unfortunately, the political climate is absolutely set against it. Having, a Democratic president, Democratic-controlled Senate, to get any reversal on the existing legislation that is burning this industry, in my mind, until we have a seed change in Washington, is not going to happen. Now, what it does, I think, it does put some pressure on EPA, for example, to do the right thing. Do they really want a House committee continuing to hammer them about overburdensome regulation? It also, I think, sets the scene for what could happen if indeed there's a sea change come November.
I see. Do you have any idea about the timeline? And you were saying about hearings, about when they may happen?
Yeah, the latest I heard, sometime within the next 2 weeks. I don't think the exact date's been set.
So then it's possible something could take place before an election, do you imagine?
Well, there's going to be hearings, but is anything going to change other than perhaps slow EPA down? I doubt it.
I gotcha. Seal of approval, I understand, or maybe you could give us an update there. There's some developments there.
Oh, well, yeah. When you and I last talked, which seems like it was, a month and a half ago since you blew me off the last time. You can feel free to edit that out. when we last talked, IICRC had been here in town, and we had a very constructive meeting with them because, they are the consummate professionals. I mean, they work to improve the customer satisfaction with cleaning, just as we do. They are focused more on the cleaning professionals and the cleaning firms. And as you and I have said on numerous occasions, to be successful, we need four things. We need the right chemicals and the right equipment. We need the right technicians, and we need the right management program for the flooring. But we've had a very good relationship ever since I've been here in 2000, there are some of their members which, have pushed back on the seal of approval program. And we talked to them about this because, we want to get even closer with the IICRC than we've been in the past. And so we felt like it was appropriate to try to knock down some of these barriers that some of their members have with the seal of approval. One of those is the lack of an oily substance in the soil that we use to test deep cleaning systems. Another one is that we don't currently have a protocol for interim systems. And both of those are issues that we've been aware of for some time, and in fact have at various times reached out to people in the cleaning community to see if they could help us design an interim cleaning system protocol. But really nothing has really happened. But I'm happy to report that the Product Performance and Specification Panel has asked to have two new task groups formed. One of those will address this issue of a protocol for interim cleaning systems, and the other one will work on the development of the appropriate testing soil for deep cleaning systems that will also contain an oily substance. Now, we know that will have a marked impact on the grading of deep cleaning systems, but we felt like it's going to get us closer to the real world, and that's always a good thing.
Will everybody have to be retested once this new soil is?
Well, I think what we'll probably end up doing, and this we've talked about it, but no final decision has been made, and it's similar to what we've done in the past. We will probably give the people who are in the program some period of grandfatherhood where they will stay in there listed as they are. But as new systems are tested or their renewal time comes up, we'll test them under the new protocol.
Okay.
This is going to conclude the second part of a three-part series. We're talking with Warner Braun, the president of the Carpet and Rug Institute. We'll air the final part of this series tomorrow. This is Floor Radio.